He lived longer as far as numbers of years than either his father or his son. And though he lived the longest, less is written about him than either his father or his son. In fact, there's only one chapter in the Bible exclusively devoted to him. So much of what is written about him overlaps with his father, and it overlaps with his son. He appeared to be somewhat of a pessimistic person because he seemed to consider himself old and ready for the grave when he still had about 43 years of life left. He may have been a person controlled somewhat by his physical appetite, which comes out in the fact that he had to have a meal before he would give his blessing to his son. His life appears to be rather bland, and yet he died in faith. And Jesus said, he will be in the kingdom. For he said, you will see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom. And you yourselves, he said to the Pharisees, thrown out. Isaac lived the longest of the three patriarchs, 180 years. Abraham lived 175 years, and Jacob 147 years. Isaac was kind of a special person. Not so much in all that he did, but in his advent, in his coming. The birth of Isaac was one of the most celebrated and significant births ever recorded in the scriptures. In fact, there's only one birth that's more celebrated, more significant than the birth of Isaac, and that was the birth of Jesus. Not even John the Baptist's birth was celebrated in as much as Isaac's birth. His birth became part of the covenant that God made with Abraham. And that covenant had two main promises. The promise of the seed. Abraham was going to have a seed. The seed would come. And that seed is dual, as we know, how the Apostle Paul talks about the seed is Christ. So the seed was going to be plural, a seed, and then a special seed. Seed singular, for Christ. The promise of the seed and the promise of the land, the soil. So there's a promise of soil and the promise of seed. But Abraham was not so much concerned about the soil. It was not the soil he was concerned about. It was the seed that was important to Abraham. Let's take a look at Genesis chapter 15. Genesis 15, we'll drop beginning in verse 1. After these things, the word of the Lord came, the word of the Eternal came to Abram. Now at that time he was called Abram. In a vision, saying, do not fear, Abram. I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. But Abram said, O Eternal God, what will you give me, since I am childless? And the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. Eliezer was his top steward. He was the steward of his house, the house ruler. And Abraham said, since you have given me no offspring, one born in my house is my heir. So, I mean, this guy was born there. I guess his parents served. He served Abraham. Then behold, the word of the Eternal came and saying to him, this man, this Eliezer, shall not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body. He shall be your heir. And he took him outside. And this is God taking him outside. And he said, look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them. And he said to him, so shall your descendants be. And in verse 6, one of the most famous verses, then he believed God, and it was reckoned to him for righteousness. In chapter 16 of Genesis, now Sarai was, you know, she knew what God was saying to Abram. She knew that Abram was supposed to have a child out of his own body, but she figured she couldn't do it. So in chapter 16, verses 1 and 2, now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, "Now behold, the Eternal has prevented me from bearing children. I can't have any. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I will obtain children through her." And Abraham listened to Sarai. So, very important for Abram and his wife, the most important seed. They could inherit the land. God's going to give them all this land. Remember, go leave the Ur of the Chaldees, go into a land that I will tell you about, and I'm going to make of you a great nation. You're going to inherit that land. You're going to take a look. Look north, look south, look east, look west. All this land is yours. Now, we might say something about priorities with these two. In their priorities, seed was more important than soil. Having children, having an heir, was more important than having things. They had their priorities correct. Today, you know, in our world, people, you know, I don't know. I counsel people all the time and say, "Oh, I don't know if I want to have any children. You know, I mean, if I have children, then we can't afford this nice condo. And if we have children, we can't afford this nice car. And we have children, we can't afford this. We have that. We can't afford this. We can't afford that. And, you know, we want to take more vacations and we want to travel more. And, you know, I want stocks and we want to build up some, you know, have a house here and a condo there. And we want all these things." But Sarah and Abraham said, "We want a seed. We need the seed." And God listened to them. Their most precious possession became, namely, their son. Actually, their children, because Abraham had another son from Hagar. The seed, then, is more important than the soil, and our children are more important than our things. Now, there were 25 years of predictions for Isaac's birth. 25 years. They started all the way back in Ur of the Chaldees, where Abraham was first, you know, talked about. So let's go back there, Genesis chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, 1 and 2. "Now, the Eternal said to Abram, 'Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you.'" I'm going to show you the land. You're going to get the land. "And I will make you a great nation." Now, the implication of "I will make you a great nation" implies you're going to have children. He had no children, neither he nor his wife. "And I will bless you and make your name great, and so shall you be a blessing." So from that first contact that Abram ever had with God was the promise of seed and soil. Genesis 15, verses 4 and 5. "Then behold, the word of the Eternal came to him, saying," you remember we just read that, "'This man shall not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body, he shall be your heir.'" So there's again a repeated promise. In chapter 12, there's a promise. Chapter 15, there's a promise. Coming to chapter 17 of the book of Genesis, dropping down to verse 19. "But God said, 'No, but Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son.'" Now, in this prophecy, the name was already set. "And you shall call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him." So the covenant came to Abraham, then it went to Isaac. "I'm going to establish my covenant with him. Sarah, he's going to be Sarah's child." So here were these long time. I mean, over a period of years, 10 years go by, 12 years go by, and so on. Chapter 17, verse 21. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you at this season next year. Now, there's not only the prediction, not only the name you're supposed to call him, but here's when you're going to have him. Chapter 18, Genesis 18, dropping down to verse 10. He said, I will surely return to you at this time next year. And behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son. And Sarah was listening at the tent of the door, which was behind him. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. Sarah was past childbearing. Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And the Eternal said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I bear a child when I am so old? And here it is in verse 14. Is anything too difficult for the Eternal? Is anything? In other words, if God says it, if God promises it, is anything too difficult? Here's a woman that's way past the age. Is it too difficult? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. But Sarah denied it, however, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. And he said, no, but you did laugh. And what was her son's name? Isaac. What did it mean? Laughter. Laughter. Or he laughs. Somebody laughs. Laughter. Now, here are the promises. All these years, 25 years of promises, and then came the fulfillment. In Genesis 21, verses 1 and 2, then the Eternal took note of Sarah, as he had said, and the Eternal did for Sarah as he had promised. Those words are so pregnant with meaning, so filled with faith and meaning. Then God took note of her. He did for her what he had promised. He had been promising it and promising it and promising it, and now he did it. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age. Listen to this last statement. At the appointed time of which God had spoken to him. He said, she'll bear a child at this time next year. And she did. God's word, brethren, never fails. If God makes a promise, you have to be sure it's an absolute promise. You can't go around the scriptures and just grab anything. Well, that's a promise for me, and that's a promise for me. Because sometimes it's not a promise for you. It's a promise for someone else. But when God makes a promise to you, as he has with us, when Jesus Christ said, your sins are forgiven, when you come to Christ and your sins are washed away, when God makes a promise to you, it's absolute. There is no doubt about it. God's promises are absolute, and we can trust in them because they're absolute. In the book of Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews talks about the faith that Sarah had. Listen to Hebrews chapter 11, verses 11 and 12. By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life. She was way beyond childbearing years. Since she considered him, God, faithful who had promised. Now, we don't hear much about Sarah's faith. But the book of Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews here says, Sarah had faith. She had accepted. I'm willing to do this. Now, a lot of people say, no, they count me out here. I'm too old for this stuff. I don't want to have a child. I'm way old. I don't want to have a kid. This is not going to be good for me. I don't feel like doing this. But she had faith. She said, I have the pleasure of it. She was excited. Am I going to pay you? She laughed at it because it was beyond beyond belief. It was beyond funny. A woman this old, past her childbearing years, I'm going to have a child now? Are you kidding me? But even Sarah herself, she had faith, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead at that. He's as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of the heaven in number and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. From that one child came the descendants of Abraham, the descendants of the covenant, and that child took the covenant. So the birth of Isaac was a miracle birth. There was no doubt about it. It had to be a miracle birth. Everything about that birth required divine intervention, from the conception to the actual birth. A woman that age, if she were to be pregnant, you know, would have to have God's divine intervention in her to give birth. Over and over again, the scriptures show us, and they emphasize sometimes the problems. Now, you'll see the problems. Why did she need divine power? Well, it was evident. We just read some of these scriptures, so let me reiterate them. You know, it's evident in the scriptures that Sarah and Abraham were old and advanced in age. Remember, we just read Genesis chapter 18. Now Abraham and Sarah, in verses 11 and 12, were old, advanced in age, and Sarah was past childbearing. That's why she said, am I supposed to have this pleasure now? All these years I couldn't have a baby, now I'm going to have one? That requires divine intervention. You just don't have that. In Genesis chapter 21 and verse 2, Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age. He was old. I mean, he was 99 years old when Isaac's born. 99. In Genesis 21 and verses 5 through 7, now Abraham was 100 years old. 100 years old. He was 99 when that he came, and I said next time, next year. 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Sarah said, God has made laughter to me. For everyone who hears, this is Genesis 21, verses 5 through 7. For everyone who hears will laugh with me. I mean, are you kidding? A celebration. She said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? I think King James just said that Sarah would give suck. That's what that's the, you know, blunt way of saying. But who would have said that to Abraham, Sarah will nurse children? Who would say that? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. That's miraculous. That takes divine intervention. That takes the power of God. And in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul was so aware of this. He was so aware of this. And when he's talking about the faith of Abraham in Romans chapter 4, and you drop down to verse 19, he says, without becoming weak in faith, he contemplated his own body, now as good as dead. Just didn't have the sperm count, just did not have the ability to generate children, since he was about 100 years old. And he also, Abraham, contemplated the deadness of Sarah's womb. You notice how the Bible describes this then? Here are the difficulties. Here are the hurdles. You know, you have these two elderly people, they want to have a baby. Well, I'll tell you what. Number one, you don't have any more menstrual periods. Number two, Abraham is an old man. And number three, you're way past this time. And number four, you got, you know, how's you going to do it? It's just never known of people. So you got all these hurdles to overcome. So often in Scripture, God likes to emphasize the difficulties that are in the face of God's promises. God makes you a promise, but then you got this hurdle and that difficulty and this something. but God's promises. Is there anything too hard for the eternal? He does that in order to show us the enormity of God's power. It wasn't them. It wasn't somehow they took some vitamin or some herb. It was God's power that did it. That's why, you know, if you think about it, when God first saw Abraham, how old was he? 75 years old in Ur of the Chaldees. But, you know, you might have a child when you're 75, and maybe Sarah, 75 too, you know. It just could be a fluke. So, no, you're not going to have it then. And then you're in your 80s. Well, you know, some people can, you know, can get some kind of powers, you know, in their 80s. And no, not going to have it in your 80s. And it could be maybe when you got 90 that you just could be just a little extraordinarily potent. And no, not in your 90. But 100 years old, and her close 100 years old, you know, now you're going to see it's God's power. I don't want anybody to think it happened naturally. It didn't happen naturally. It happened by the power of God. Now, Abraham was told in the covenant chapter, in chapter 17 of Genesis, and in verse 19, but God said, no, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son. And you shall call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his descendants. Now, we read that. But if you'll remember, this is the covenant chapter. Remember earlier, dropping back to verses 10 through 14 here? This is my covenant which you shall keep, he tells Abraham. I'm changing your name from Abram to Abraham, which means father of many. Between me and you and your descendants after you, every male among you shall be circumcised. And you shall circumcise, you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. And every male among you who is 8 days old shall be circumcised throughout your generations. A servant who was born in the house or is bought with money from any foreigner who is not of your descendants. A servant who is born in your house and who is bought with money, he shall surely be circumcised. That shall your covenant, shall my covenant be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. But an uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that person shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. So a very strong, powerful statement to Abraham way back in chapter 17. Way back in chapter 17. And he's told what to call him. He's telling Abraham, I'm going to establish my covenant with this person. What did that tell us that Abraham had to do? What did it tell us that Abraham had to do? Had to circumcise him, right? That's what he had to do. Okay? So chapter 21. He is born. Remember chapter 21, verses 1 and 2. You remember that? And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham, verse 2, and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the appointed time. And now in verse 3, chapter 21, verse 3. Abraham obeyed God just as he had obeyed God when God said, get up out of your house and go to the place where I will show you. And he obeyed God to the letter. Here it is. Abraham, verse 3, called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac, which meant laughter. He did exactly because God said, I'm going to have you born then. You shall call his name what? Isaac. That was in chapter 17. This is chapter 21. He called his name Isaac. But verse 4, then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now, you know, I don't know about you, but If someone said to me, "You circumcise your son, you do it," okay? He didn't say Abraham called the, what do you call them? The Moyle. You know, he didn't say Abraham called the Moyle, "Come on over here and circumcise my son while I sit back, go in the other room, put my hands in my ears while the baby cries and screams," you know, because babies cry and scream when you circumcise them. I like this. Come on in, you know. No, it's not a pleasant thing. So Abraham had to circumcise. That he says, okay, God said to me, I have to circumcise my son on the eighth day. Now, we read it, you know, like it's nothing. Okay, and he called his name Isaac, and Abraham circumcised his son Isaac. Okay, that's great, really nice. Now, it's nice for us to just read it over, but I want you to go there, you know, put yourself. He's got this little baby. This baby is 8 days old. Babies squirm. They move around. They can't see. You know, now, sit still. You can't tell a little baby 8 days old to sit still. You can't tell, okay, now just spread your legs and just be calm. Now, you can't tell a little baby to do that. None of these things are easy for a baby. But he's got to do it. He's got to, you know, kind of hold, somebody hold him down, you know, and I'm going to take you on. And, you know, in those days, they didn't have particularly sharp surgical weapons. You know what I mean? I got this stone. It seems pretty sharp. And whatever, and you're going to circumcise this kid who's screaming and crying and doing his thing, and you know, and you're going to have to do this. You know, we don't realize how tremendously difficult this was, and how a lot of people have said, you know, I thought, look, this is just this is just messy. This is messy. It's bloody. I can't take it. Let's just forget it. Was told to do it. He did it. It wasn't easy. There are a lot of things that are not easy. He did it. Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old. Now, why 8 days? Everybody thought, well, that's an old superstition. The old Bible's got all these superstitious things in it. Until some years ago in the 60s, I read a book about the diseases and illnesses, you know, in the Bible and so on. And this doctor was showing how science now had discovered that on the eighth day after birth, the amount of vitamin K in the baby's bloodstream rose dramatically as the intestines really began to function properly, and the small intestine could digest the things that would raise up the amount of vitamin K in the system. And that it was much safer, that circumcision on the eighth day was much safer for the baby to clot and to heal up faster because of that eighth day, and the intestines, the small intestines, are working to extract the most nutrients out of the mother's milk. So here, and also because of the high amount of anti-infection ability that the body has at that time. So Abraham did what he was told. He named the child. Now, look, we're going to name this child. You know how much time and effort people will pour through books over names? Oh, you know, do we name him Fletcher? Do we name him, Theodore? Do we name him, what are we going to name this boy? You know, do we name him Chad? Do we name him Judd? Do we name him Peter? Do we name him Paul? Do we name, you know, what are we going to name this boy? People will pour over, I want a beautiful name. I want a name that means something. I want a name that has significance. Now, there were significances. When God changed Sarah's name, from Sarai to Sarah, Sarah, a beautiful name. You know what Sarah means? It means princess. Sarah is princess. You know, a lot of people call their little girls, "Hey, princess," you know. But that's what Sarah's name meant, princess. Abraham was changed from Abram to Abraham, which meant the father of multitudes of many people. So it was a very nice name. Even when they named Ishmael, let's take a name for Ishmael. Ishmael means God hears. Ishmael, God hears. Well, let's name this kid. God already told us what we have to name him. Not a great name. Laughter? Come here, Laughter. Is that what you're going to say? Here, Laughter. Come over here. Stop, Laughter. Don't stop. Stop laughing, Laughter. And whatever. You're going to name this kid Laughter. I don't want to name him Laughter. I want to name him something else, a beautiful name, a meaningful name. I mean, after all, Abraham's name is beautiful, father of multitudes. Sarah's beautiful, princess. And we got to name this kid Laughter? I mean, that's ridiculous. That's hard to do. But you know what he did? He did it. He called his son Isaac, which meant laughter. I'm going to do it. That's what God said to do. I'm going to do it. As I said, circumcising the child was not an easy thing to do. But Abraham did it. You get a promise from God. You get a gift from God. God intervenes with power and authority. He intervenes and gives you a promise. He does for you what he says. And your response has to be thankful and obedient. And certainly Abraham's was. To a son who carried on the covenant. A son whose life was dramatically important in many ways. It's not the end of the Isaac story. We'll continue it in our next sermon.